morning. So we're trying to fit in 6 weeks of Shiurim in a one-hour Chazara. Necessarily what that means is the sources on your sheet are largely for decoration. This is going to be more discussion than anything else. But we'll see. We'll see what we can do with this. The goal, obviously, is to summarize what we did. I am leaving out some of the bells and whistles, some of the questions and ins and outs in order to try to present the overall. The first half of this is the shiur that I gave in Elul Zman on the topic of Taromes. The issue of the complaint one has against somebody who breaks a verbal agreement. And I have four questions that I want to go through here. The first is, what triggers something called Mechusar Amana? That someone is acting in bad faith. The second one, what triggers taromes, a complaint against somebody? What's the relationship between the two? In the event that there is a claim of taromes, or a claim that someone was in fact mechusar amana, does that come with any financial obligation to the victim? And then finally, how does one act on taromes? So you have a taromes against somebody. What exactly do you do to them? So I start out with Mechusar Amana. Mechusar Amana is a term, literally I rendered it as in bad faith, right? Lacking in loyalty. Is somebody whose behavior breaks a verbal agreement. It is also known as Ein Ruach Chachamim Nocha Himenu, as we will see. We'll talk about that phrase. And a subset of it, I argue, is the case of Taromes. The classic cases of Mechusar Amana, so I brought you on the sheet in source, Aleph, the Gemara in Bava Metzia Mem Tesamet Aleph, the case involving backing out of a verbal commitment. In that case, it was regarding buying flax, prepaying for flax. And then flax goes up in value, right? The seller says, well, I'm not interested in selling the flax anymore. So the deal there is you are able to back out of a verbal commitment. However, it's still an issue of what's called mechusar amana, right? You remember the story, right? Rav Kahana backs out of an agreement to sell flax because the flax goes up in value. Rav says it's not even mechusar amana if he gives them flax for whatever down payment they made, since the rest of the agreement is just verbal, and Rabbi Yochanan disagrees. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, that's mechusar amana. We have a separate label, which I referenced in the beginning, called Ein Ruach Chachamim Nocha Himenu. The Rosh Mishans renders the phrase Ein Ruach Chachamim Nocha Himenu to mean the Chachamim are not pleased with this person. The Ruach Chachamim is not Nocha, is not okay with this person, whereas the Ranach disagreed and says no. What it means is the Ruach Chachamim is not Nocha Himenu, does not emanate from him. The question is how you translate the word Nocha, which is an odd word. So he's not acting like Chachamim. So two examples of it. One was a Mishnah in Shavuos, which you see here in the second source. The Mishnah there talks about somebody who repays a debt even though Shemitah has nullified the debt. Then we said that's Ruach Chacham Nocha Imenu. We approve. Whether, you know, the Chachamim are happy with you or you acting like the Chachamim. Then they talk about somebody who borrows money from a ger and then the ger passes away. And then the last line in this set of examples of good or bad behavior is called a mekayem es devaro. If you fulfill your words, even though all you committed was your word, ruach chachamim nocha hemenu. The chachamim are good with it, as opposed to bav metzia memches in source gimel, which says that somebody who is choser bo, somebody who recants on a verbal agreement, ein ruach chachamim nocha hemenu. The chachamim are not pleased. There's nothing harsher as a penalty. But that's what we say. The Gemara never actually links Ein Ruach Chachamim Nocha Himenu and Mechusar Amana. It applies them in the same circumstance in which you broke a verbal agreement, but you never see them in the room at the same time. It's the Rambam who merges the two in Source Dalet, where the Rambam talks about somebody who breaks a verbal agreement, and you see the end of the line in the Rambam, Harei Zev Mechusar Amana Ve'ein Ruach Chachamim Nocha Himenu. That's Mechusar Amana, and the Chachamim ain't happy. So the Rambam is the one who merges the two as terms for breaking a verbal agreement. However, none of them mention the term that we have as the title for our shiur, which is taromes. That is not mentioned in those cases. And the reason seems to be because taromes isn't about you broke your verbal agreement, therefore I have taromes, literally a complaint against you. Rather, it's you broke a verbal agreement and there was fallout for me. As a result of that, I was, and then we'll see what happened to me, but something happened to me. We'll see that shortly. But something happened to me beyond the fact that I feel like you betrayed me. And therefore, I have taromas. So essentially, taromas is a subset of mechusar amana ein ruach hachamim nocha hemenu. Is everyone clear on that? Everyone clear on what we've said in the last 5 minutes and 12 seconds?
Okay. I would say it's not a subset, it's plus.
Well, it's a subset in the sense that there's a set of all cases in which we say mechusar amana, and only some of those will have taromas. That's what I mean when I say subset, but you are correct that what happened was worse in the case of taromas. So what exactly is wrong with breaking a verbal agreement? Before we get into taromas, what exactly is wrong with breaking a verbal agreement? So I want to credit again that when I first did this shiur, Rabbi Yosef Fleischman's article in Alon HaMishpat, which was very good, very helpful. I thought I put the link on the sheet, but I see I did not. So if you look at source Hey, I gave you a table of what the issues are. The Rosh Mishan says there's no isser whatsoever. There's no isser. He says, that's why the language is so mild. Yeah, the Chacham aren't happy with you. Okay. You know, he doesn't address the Mechusar Amana language, which seems to me to be a little bit stronger. But nonetheless, he says there's no isser. Second view is that it is a derabanan. And this is brought from the Ranach, that the issue here is, as I put on the table here, She'eris Yisrael lo yasu avla. That's not technically a derabanan. That's actually a pasuk in Zephaniah. But it might as well be a derabanan, because, you know, no one, if you ask them, you know, 10 Jews on the street, where is Zephaniah in Tanakh, they would say it must be some rabbinic thing. So might as well be. No, She'eris Yisrael lo yasu avla is the Nimuke Yosef's pasuk, the Rashi of Metzia Mem Tesam and Aleph, also brings it. But that's your derabanan. And then there's a possibility it's a deoraisa. The deoraisa is, as I put on the sheet, because of the pasuk hein tzedek. Is it really a deoraisa under hein tzedek? It depends on how you understand what hein tzedek means. Literally, hein tzedek is not hein tzedek. The pasuk actually says hin tzedek. Right? It's listing the honest weights and measures that you have to have. And it mentions the efa measure, and it mentions the hin measure. And we understand that that term hin is really redundant in the pasuk. You didn't need to mention hin. So so from this we learn that your hein, your yes, shall be tzedek, shall be just. But there are two ways you could explain that. One way to explain that is, you have an obligation to fulfill your words and make them true. When you say hein, you better follow through. The other way to take it is, when you say hein, you have to mean it. You have to be sincere. Nafkamina between the two, right? The difference between the two is, what if you meant it when you said it, but then you didn't fulfill it afterwards? At the time, you were 100% sincere. So you can support the first view, the more expanded view of Hein Tzedek. Do you actually have to take steps to fulfill it? Because Rashi uses that in Ksuvos. So the Gemara in Ksuvos Peivav says that there's a mitzvah to pay your debts. Rashi says, how do I know that? Hein Tzedek. Even though I meant it sincerely when I took out the loan, Rashi believes Hein Tzedek means you have to take steps in order to fulfill it. In order to fulfill it. Although I have to say, a simple read of the drasha is actually like the second view, that you just have to be sincere when you are speaking. But the bottom line is, if you take what seems to be Rashi's view of Hein Tzedek, that you have an obligation to take steps to make sure that your word is true, then if a person breaks their verbal agreement, even though they intended it honestly at the time, that will be violation of a deoraisa. There may not be a penalty for it, at least in Beis Din. We'll talk about that. But that's the basic idea. So what we've said is, again, you have to keep your verbal agreements. In the event that you don't keep your verbal agreements, it may be there's no isser, just ein ruach hacham no chahimenu. It could be it's a derabanan. You are acting in a way that is corrupt. She'eris Yisrael lo yasu avla. Jews are not supposed to behave in that way. Or it's actually a violation of a deoraisa, this deoraisa of hein tzedek. I gave you there, Ravid Rash Barash. If you look back at the original shiur, you'll be able to see where all of them are, but they're all localized around above Mitzia Mimtes. That's where their comments appear. Okay, so what exactly is it that is extra that triggers the taromes, right? So that puts you in a league not just of mechusar amana, but that actually generates a taromes situation. So the key point that I want to emerge from the cases we're going to discuss is that all of them are going to involve behavior which does not live up to a verbal agreement, or indicates that a verbal agreement was made deceptively, and the harm in it is primarily non-financial, or minimally financial. I start with the financial case. This is the hardest one in the bunch, because I would have thought that anytime you cause somebody financial harm, you have now risen above the level of taromes, and now you're in something actionable. But it's not necessarily so. I brought you in source vav the very confusing case, which we're not going to go through, but the case in which either the contractor tricked the workers or the contractor tricked the boss, somebody tricked somebody into either paying higher wages or accepting lower wages than they technically were entitled to. And the rule is that taromes is applicable in that case. And you see the way I did it on the sheet. I tried to make this relatively clear. So I gave you the daf where you can find it. I gave you the basics of what happened. What is causing the taromes in this case? It is technically a financial thing. I see that in the title of the table. There's a typo. No, that's right. No, that's wrong. It's hatar omes, not hatar aromes. Oh, this isn't bad shaving. Hatar omes. Okay, fine. One typo. And then where you can find this discussed in the Shulchan Aruch. So that's one case in which there seems to be taromes because of causing somebody some level of financial harm. It may also apply in the boat case, an ayin tesamud beis, right? Tesamud aleph, sorry, tesamud aleph two of these, where you cause the owner of the boats to have to buy longer ropes because there's more cargo, or you know, whatever that case is. We're going to come back to it. So it could be that you're actually causing him financial harm. Nonetheless, it's only taromes. It's not necessarily so, because the chavrusa comment on that gemara there is that the burden of ropes is always on the owner, and that's why there is no payment from the renter. And the taromes is therefore really not so much for a financial cost exactly. Unclear to me. Maybe that's not quite a case of financial cost leading to taromes. Well, yeah.
Any case of financial loss where there's actually financial loss does need to be paid. By definition, if we're assigning taromes to a financial loss,
right,
we clearly hold that it's not actually a halachically owed money.
Correct.
There's a difference between financial loss.
Wait a second. I want to understand what he's saying. Yeah.
Right. So, in all these cases, I mean, wherever you rope Sas Kesef, it's not actually that someone made someone lose money in terms of the halachic definition. It's, we are able to say that maybe there is some sort of...
There is. I could have been in a better financial position than the one I am in now, and it's because you either were deceptive with your verbal agreement in the first case, or in the ropes case, you did not honor the verbal agreement.
Right, but it's never really a case of money, though, that people have to pay.
No, it is never a case that someone has to pay something for it. That is true. Right. Yes,
I think what you mean is don't conflate the mechanism with the result. I think what you're arguing is that the taromes comes from when I have less money.
Yeah.
But in halacha, we don't always aren't always mechayev someone.
No, that's 100% true.
I think that.
Yeah. No, that's true. So your first type of case is where there is a minimal financial cost. Your second type, but not enough to, or not direct enough to trigger liability. And then your second type of a case, the one that's more familiar to us, is where there's a cost in terms of strain or in terms of time. So we had the Gemara Nayin Vav Amud Beis involving the boss or the workers who back out of an agreement, and now they need to either, the boss needs to find new employees, the worker needs to find a new employer. And we applied taromes in that case. Also the case in which you hired a donkey to use to carry your merchandise somewhere, and halfway through the trip, the donkey dies. It was weak from the start, it seems to be part of this case. And so, again, now you're going to need to go to the effort of getting yourself a new donkey the rest of the way. The Tosfos here asks why the renter is paying for the first half of the trip. He didn't actually want to go there. So one of his answers is you could have gotten another donkey there, it's just more expensive. So that leads me to ask, well then, if that's true, if it's more expensive, why can't I take that out of what I pay for the first half of the trip, right? Again, I'm rushing a little bit, so let me slow it down. I took a trip that was supposed to take me from, I think we said back in Elulzman, I wanted to go from here to New York. The donkey broke down in Batavia, and now I am stuck in Batavia. I need to get to New York. So I need to get a new donkey. So Tosvos asks, according to Halacha and the Gemara, I, the person who rented the donkey, have to pay the owner of the donkey for the trip from Toronto to Batavia. Why do I have to pay him from Toronto to Batavia? The answer is, because I can get another donkey in Batavia to take me to New York. It's just going to be a little more expensive. So then the question you have to ask is, why can't, if it's more expensive for me, right, it would have cost me $100 to get from Batavia to New York. Now it's going to cost me $150. So why can't I knock that $50 out of what I pay for the first half of the trip? So the why isn't this, in other words, in the Ketzas Kesef line? I think not, because as Tosfos says, this situation is also considered an onus for the owner. In other words, he didn't want to lose his donkey. He didn't know his donkey was going to go. Yeah, it was weak. You know, but everyone has a car like this, right? You didn't know that it was going to die then. And the mechanic said, you know, it'd be a good idea for you to do the service. Not use it. Your car's fine. That's what makes this different and why there's no expense. Yeah.
So again, just to clarify, you said the Tosis's question was to say this taroma should be in the Ketzas Kesef. Tosis is not asking that you actually have to pay.
No, Tosis was asking why is it that you have to pay for the first half of the trip in the first place.
Right.
And his answer was because he took you to Batavia,
right,
and you're going to be able to go from there. That's his initial point. It's just it's just going to cost you a little bit more,
right, so
in order to get there. But then Tosvos asks. No, but then Tosvos asks about this. But then why aren't you able? He's not asking why isn't this a type one case. He's asking why don't you actually have to pay? And Tosvos' answer is because it was onus for the owner. His question was, why doesn't the owner have to refund you that extra expense, essentially? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, it was onus for him.
And therefore, his conclusion is that this taromis comes because you're losing money also.
You think that's what he's saying? I thought he's just saying the taromis is that you have to go get more, you have to go get a new donkey.
And also you
I can, hear you could say that. I hear that you could say that. I'm not sure that that's where he ends up.
Okay.
It could be that it's a Ketzas Kesef case. It wouldn't bother me so much, but I'm not sure. The Shach on this, makes a comment which becomes very controversial, and that's why I brought it here. He discusses the question of whether Taromis applies only if the strain you experience is unusual for you. Was it something that was unexpected? This was Rabbi Yaris's point. We discussed this back in Elul, but the difference between workers needing to find work and a boss needing to find new workers in the middle of the day. Maybe it's worse for the boss to have to find new workers in the middle of the day than it is for the workers to have to go find work. That's the Shach's suggestion, but most poskim think not. It comes from Nuka Yosef. The Nuka Yosef seems to say that there's taromes only if the tarach is unusual for you, like it is for the boss. But the Magi Mishnah quotes the Ramban and quotes the Rashba that workers have taromes if they need to go find another job and it's going to involve strain for them, and that's true in the Shulchan Aruch and Shin Lamed Gimel Beis. So the Nuga Yosef is on that side, but many, many others disagree. Okay. The third type is emotional strain. So emotional strain is featured most prominently in the boat case. The case in which you hired the boat, you went to a certain point, and then you said, you know what, I'm out of here, presumably when it's in port. So the strain is now for the Baal HaSfina. So there was a lot of confusion about how to read that Gemara. We had different versions of it within the Gemara itself. But the upshot of it is that according to Rashi, the owner has taromes in the event that new cargo is brought on board because it's going to slow him down. That was Rashi's read. He wanted to go faster, and now he has to go slower. Or alternatively, the first renter of the boat is getting off the boat, and new people are getting on, and now you have to deal with these new people. You know, you liked the first guy. The second guy, who knows if you're going to like him or not, right? You're under the gun when you take them on, because you don't want this trip to be for nothing. So you take them on. Who knows if you're going to like them or not like them? The Shach makes the interesting point that in that case, it's in part of Source Yud, it's only going to be a taromes case in the event that there was time for them to adjust to each other first. Right? Otherwise, how can he say, well, I liked the first guy? He doesn't know if he liked the first guy. That's the argument that for emotional strain. However, in the event that there are justifications for backing out or deceiving, that may eliminate taromes. So one, we already saw, one justification was ones. The another justification, though, for it is the is brought by the Maharsha in the case where the boat renter sold off all his merchandise by the time he was halfway through. So realistically, I'm justified in leaving. Like, why should I take my trip all the way there? I didn't want to cruise. I sold off my stuff, so I want to leave. Ah, but that's not nice. Hey, wait a minute. Okay, fine. But I was justified in doing so. Similarly, the Baal HaMor, controversially, says that if you make a verbal agreement with somebody and then the price changes, right? Go back to Rav Kahana now in the Gemara that we saw in the beginning. He says if you make a verbal agreement and then the price changes, so you are able to back out of it because the price changed. That's the Baal HaMor's position. Based on the Gemara about the flax, as well as based on the Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Ches about backing out of a sale of an Amma because the market changed. So that's the position of the Baal HaMor on this. I thought I was putting him on the
Pre-Sha. I brought it in the Pre-Sha.
Right. I brought in the Pre-Sha Yudalev. Okay. So that's his position. Although we noted when we gave Shear on this that, there's a lot of opposition to the position of the Baal HaMor. The other, justification that may eliminate Taromes is where the pain you're causing the other fellow is not so great. So the Maharsha offers this explanation regarding the boat renter who sold off all his merchandise, but there are other customers for the boat available. So again, he says that's the reason why this isn't really such a big deal, because, you know, it's not such a big deal. You can get new customers. Is there a financial obligation associated with Taromes and Mechusar Amana? So we had two different views. The Tiferes Yisrael took the position that since the Mishnah says, Ein lo ela Taromes, all he has is Taromes, that means that's it. There's nothing else. There isn't even a Latzis Yidei Shemayim. You don't even have to satisfy God. The other guy's not happy. Go home. However, the Pre-Sha disagrees. He says most believe that there is indeed an obligation to make things right for the other guy. You have to appease him. It may be argued, we noted, that a kinyan has taken place via the verbal agreement, and that's why you have an obligation to appease the other party. Certainly, the simple way to look at it is that there is no kinyan because you're able to back out, right? If there's a kinyan, how are you backing out? However, Tosfos in Ksuvos Kuf Beis Amud Aleph Aliba quotes Rabbi Yochanan to say that there are statements that can be binding like kinyan. We talked about Matana Mu'etes. You promise somebody we're going to give them a very small gift. They believe you. That's a quasi-kinyan. If it's a quasi-kinyan, then why are you able to fully back out? You should only be able to quasi-back out. So Rabbi Yochanan, the Kovet Shirim of Abbasra, Shin Ayin Dalet, explains because that's what the parties meant. Meaning, it's a type of kinyan in which the parties understand you could still walk away. So effectively, what we're positing is the existence of partial kinyanim. That's really what this comes down to. Finally, what does taromes actually look like? So you don't have any description of what taromes looks like. What you have are descriptions of what mechusar amana looks like. And what you're doing to this person seems more a function of the Mechusar Amana, honestly, than the Taromes. We have three different views presented in Rishonim. Rashi and Bafmetzio Nun Beis Amud Beis comments on Ahavamina in the Gemara. The Gemara there is talking about a case of Onah, in which the person who was cheated on the price wants to reverse the transaction, but after the statute of limitations. The Halacha says you're only allowed to for a certain period of time until you have the opportunity to show the purchase to someone, whatever it is. And he waited until too late. He comes back to the chassid and says, chassid specifically, says, I want to reverse the transaction. The chassid says, fine, I'll be a nice guy, I'll take it back, even I don't have to, because I'm a chassid, therefore I'm going to do it. So all the chassid only has taromes against him. That's it. So the question is, well then why not just not take it back? Why would you want to have taromes? And Rashi, their comments, you're going to be bashing this guy in public. Why would you want to do that? Which indicates that Taromas actually is a public bashing. That's what Rashi seems to say. On the other hand, the Haggaz Mordechai Bav Metzia Tach Nun Aleph seems to say we do not announce it. We just warn this guy, you know, if you retract, this fellow has Taromas. What's Taromas? Boo. But that's Taromes. And then the Tashbate says it's Taromes before Hashem. He actually is on Taromes. He says it's Taromes before Hashem. Which is very interesting. What does that exactly mean? Maybe it means the Mechusar Amana part is public and the Taromes part is in front of God. I don't know. What would be the justification or reason for doing this in public? So one, obviously, is to warn people, right? This guy is a dishonest guy. People need to know that. Second approach was the Nechma Bekesef, who says, look, the prohibition against shaming someone in public is v'nasi ba'amcha lo sa'or. You're not allowed to curse the nasi, which we expand beyond that. It only applies, though, to someone who is ba'amcha, someone who acts like your nation. Mechusar Amana, the Nechma Bekesef says, is eino osem ma'aseh amcha. He's not acting like a good Jew, so he has no protection from your public shaming. And then we had a third possibility from the Nechma Bekesef, which is that the goal of announcing this guy has done something wrong is to create a financial duty to repay. Right? We had this whole case of where your declaration of the obligation to repay may be what triggers the obligation. There was discussion about what if he did kiddushin with the money after there was a declaration that he had to repay. Is that kiddushin valid? Finally, there is evidence that it was indeed done publicly. We had the tshuva of the Maharam Rotenberg brought in the Beis Yosef about a man who had committed to one mo'al and then switched to another mo'al, and we said that Esheres Yisrael lo yaslu avla, and you can call this person a Rasha, and then we had a whole discussion of whether he really is a Rasha, but that I'm going to leave for the shurim that we gave in Elul. Okay? Was that somewhat clear as a digest of what we did and where we went?
Yeah.
Okay. Shkoyach.